From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. A lot of the players in the Snake Valley water controversy were bracing for Utah Governor Gary Herbert to sign the agreement with the state of Nevada. The agreement would have shared the water in an aquifer along the border, and it was designed to protect the water rights of those on the Utah side. Critics said drawing the water from Snake Valley could irreparably damage the region's hydrology, which would be devastating for ranchers in the area, for the environment, and for air quality downwind. So the governor surprised a lot of people when he announced yesterday he was not going to sign the agreement. Congress, though, is expecting some kind of arrangement. They've mandated it. So the question is, what happens now? Does Nevada sue the state? And what happens to the parts of the agreement that would have protected local water rights? Today in the program, we're talking about the next part in the controversy, and we invite you to join us after the news. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. There aren't a lot of Utahns crazy about Nevada's water plans, which of course include a $15 billion pipeline that would reach into valleys along the border of the two states. The most controversial is the water in an aquifer in the Snake Valley. Congress has mandated the two states work out some kind of an arrangement, and while Utahns don't like it, many saw the agreement that was finally reached as the best the state could do. Critics of the agreement say the implication of drawing water from sensitive aquifers like the one in Snake Valley could have disastrous impacts on the environment, on air quality, on the ranchers who make a living in western Utah. And most expected the governor, Governor Herbert, to sign the agreement. It wasn't so long ago he called it a step in the right direction, and he'd been telling residents it wasn't perfect, but it was better than nothing. So Mr. Herbert surprised a lot of people when he announced yesterday he would not be signing the agreement. And the question that remains is, what happens now? What will Nevada do? What happens to the part in the agreement that protects Utah water rights? Environmental activists like Steve Erickson see the governor's decision as an opportunity to look for a better agreement and to think outside the box, not just about water in Snake Valley, but other elements of the West's tangled water policy. So today in the program, we're exploring what happens next, now that the governor has made up his mind, and we invite you to join the conversation. 801-585-WEST is the number, 801-585-9378, our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. We begin today with the governor himself. We spoke with him yesterday, just hours after he had made the announcement. He admits he thinks the agreement is the best solution for the state right now, but after talking to the people in western Utah, he says he couldn't sign it.
As you can probably understand, this was a very difficult decision. It's a very complex issue and not easily understood by most of us. Probably a handful of people that really understand the legalese, the water law, some of the political nuances, and how unique it is out in the West Desert. So it's been a tough decision, but the clincher for me ended up being, as I spent the last weeks and a few months here talking to the folks of the West Desert, the ones who really have water on the line. It's their water we're talking about and their livelihood and their lifestyle. And overwhelmingly, and I mean overwhelmingly, the people in the three counties out there, Tooele, Millard, and Juab County, the farmers, the ranchers, the elected officials, the county commissioners, just said, don't sign the agreement. We've heard the pros. We've heard the cons. We come down on the con side. And as our governor, we want you to not sign the agreement. And that's what turned the tide. And in good conscience, I think I couldn't sign it with such overwhelmingly opposition to the agreement.
There was a point, Governor, not so long ago when you called the agreement a step in the right direction. You seemed at some point convinced it was in the best interests of those in that community. So what has changed now in that perspective?
I still believe that having an agreement between Nevada and Utah is a good thing. I think it sets parameters. It's a negotiated settlement that you would hope you'd find that you'd have something in the agreement that is a mutually acceptable, the proverbial win-win between the two entities. We're in an area that there's not a lot of case law on, and so having an agreement in place, I think, is a best and better thing. The question is whether this agreement accomplishes what needed to be done. Not only is it the right agreement, and is it the right time? And for the people of Utah and generally and particularly for the people of the West Desert that have most to lose in this issue, the answer was no. It's not the right agreement. It's not the right time. And we're prepared to move ahead and see what happens with Nevada and maybe live to fight another day. But now is not the time, and Governor, please don't sign it. So I have not.
So this presupposes that you can strike another agreement. You sound as though you're confident, or at least you hope you can.
Well, I always hope that there's opportunity for us to push the reset button and maybe have dialogue and understanding. That's better than conflict. And this is all being caused because of Nevada's need for water and their desire to somehow transport more water to Las Vegas and Clark County. And that's okay. That's a Nevada decision.
Yeah.
But our concern is, as we've reacted to that, how can we protect them so that they don't inadvertently or intentionally take any of Utah's water or jeopardize existing water rights that we have here in Utah or our environment? And so that's the whole point of the agreement, is to see if that could help. And part of the statute, the federal statutes, does require that when they go into, meaning Nevada, if and when they go into Snake Valley, there has to be an agreement with Utah on how you divide the water. So there may be another opportunity for us under the statute to have this start again. But again, I think the challenges that we have here in the state and for the people most affected is it's 15, maybe 20 years off when this will happen. And so it's just hard to say, well, gee, why are we doing this agreement now when we could – maybe it's 5 or 10 years or longer down the road before we really need to sit down and decide how we're going to, you know, parcel out the water.
But of course, now the question is, since you've decided not to sign it, where does it leave the state now? I mean, what happens to the safeguards that were put in place under the agreement? There's a lot of concern that guarantees that were in place now are sort of wiped away since you since you've decided not to sign it. So where does it leave the state now legally?
Well, that's the argument for having the agreement, and that's probably an argument for having an agreement.
Yeah.
But without the agreement, we still have the same checks in place, and that is that if we have somebody take your water right and your water and have a negative impact on your environment, you go to court.
Yeah.
And their courts are designed to take that responsibility and make those decisions. In this particular case, the court of original jurisdiction would be the Supreme Court. And so that still is an option if we have conflict. The hope is, and the reason of even trying to have an agreement was to avoid conflict.
Right.
So we hope that we don't have conflict and that we can find ways to resolve this issue that doesn't require courts. But if not, that's the place we go to resolve differences of opinion that we can't resolve any other way.
Well, that's the question. If we have conflict, do you expect the state of Nevada to now sue the state over this matter?
Not necessarily. I don't know what to predict from Nevada's point of view. I expect they'll assess where they're at and where they want to go and decide what's the pathway to get there. Whether that involves suing Utah, I don't know what they would sue us on, what the grounds for a suit would be. But, again, they can still move ahead if they desire, you know, to build a pipeline. And they have rights to go into Spring Valley and suck water down there that they already have water rights to. It's only when they enter into Snake Valley that we kind of have a responsibility to, in fact, negotiate an agreement. And clearly, if we don't have some kind of negotiated settlement, then our recourse is through the courts.
Probably too early to
It is a little early. Again, that's part of the problem in saying, is this the right agreement and is this the right time? And the answer has been no on both of those accounts by the people most affected. And so in good conscience, I can't sign the agreement.
Have you informed Nevada of your decision?
Yes, I've talked to the governor a little earlier and told him of the situation and the reasons and the whys and the wherefores. He's a gentleman. He's a good man, a good friend of mine. He understands, I think, the challenge that I face here in Utah, and he understands the concerns of the people of Utah. And so he's not insensitive to that. And who knows what the future will bring. We certainly have left opportunities there and availabilities for us to have discussion going forward. We'll just have to wait and see what happens and then react to the future.
Let me ask you about the pipeline. You've said in the past you can't stop the pipeline. I expect you still feel that way, but is there a possibility Utah could pursue a legal challenge?
I don't know. I've not pursued that line of thinking as far as stopping the pipeline. To me, that is a Nevada decision. I don't want Nevada telling Utah how to distribute our water. We have an irrigation system that's pretty sophisticated. We capture water, we pipe it, we canal it, we put it in ditches, and we distribute it as we think is appropriate. Nevada has that same right, and I don't want them telling me what to do on water in Utah, and they certainly don't want me telling them what to do in Nevada.
Governor, do you think the way the state has handled this case is going to set a precedent for other water rights cases like, for example, the Colorado River?
I don't know if it's going to be a precedent because there's nothing that's been done yet. There is a kind of a gap in the law because this has not been a common occurrence of disputes on water between state boundaries. There's some private cases and private court issues between private entities, but not as much state to state. This was going to be kind of in a new area with state to state agreements and how we distribute water and how we divide water on a shared basin. Again, it's a unique situation. That's why it's so complex and complicated. So I don't know that sets any precedent. It may be over the next 20 years as we work our way through this and find resolution, but we'll have to wait and see.
Governor, I think you surprised a lot of people today. I mean, does your decision reflect any change in your thinking about that?
I don't know whether I surprised anybody or not. Again, we do the best we can here in the best interest of the people. And I think this is where the people have spoken. I've listened, and we're on the same page.
It's Utah Governor Gary Herbert. We spoke with him yesterday, just hours after he had made the announcement that he was not going to sign the controversial Snake Valley Water Agreement. Again, we invite you to join us, 801-585-WEST, our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. Joining us on the program is Dan Bomas. He, of course, host of KUER's Morning Edition, our reporter covering environment and public lands. He's been covering this issue. Dan, welcome. Thanks for being with
thank
us.
Thank you.
We have with us Dean Baker, who is a third-generation rancher in the Snake Valley. The Baker Ranch has been in operation since the 1950s, and Dean Baker has been very active in Snake Valley water issues for years. He had come to the decision that he was going to, in fact, support the agreement. We'll be talking about that. But Dean Baker, welcome. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you for being here.
Steve Erickson is with us. He's on the board of directors for the Great Basin Water Network. It's a citizens group aimed at protecting water resources in the Great Basin. Steve Erickson, welcome.
Good morning.
And we have Dan McCool with us as well, a political science professor here at the University of Utah. His research focuses on water resource development. He's the author of River Republic, The Fall and Rise of America's Rivers, which came out last year. And Professor McCool, welcome to you.
Hi, Doug.
Well, the governor said he's not sure he surprised people. Steve Erickson, did he surprise you?
Yes, I was very much surprised, gratified, pleased. I think the governor had a very difficult choice to make. I think he made the right choice. It's not an easy thing, and we'll see where we go from here. But yes, we were taken aback, actually.
Dean Baker, I wanted to talk to you over time. As I said, you had decided to support the agreement, and we'll get to your reasons here in a moment, but how do you react to the governor's decision? You were obviously disappointed.
I'm disappointed, but I very much appreciate the governor because I know he really is worried about it. He's made tours out there with me. I think he understands that it will be a disaster for Snake Valley and Utah, and so I think he really is working on it. I think he understood, you know, I spent 4 years with the negotiations between Utah and Nevada representing Utah. So I had strong feelings about it. There are parts of it, and I realize that every great many people didn't like it because of the way the water numbers were listed. But I understood better why they were listed the way they were, what put them forth, why Nevada pushed them forth the way they were, and the parts of them were in three things. The first ones protected us that had the rights before the October 17th, 1989, when Southern Nevada applied for it. So that protected, they were separate for then. And then the second section of it was how much water could be taken. Yeah. If it was
we're going to get to the particulars. I'll give you an opportunity. I want to get some general reaction before we break it down, though. You said that the governor said the primary reason he didn't sign the agreement was because of people who lived in those areas. good friends of yours, for which you honestly disagree. But
some very good friends of mine disagreed, and some that I very much appreciate, and we even would hug each other and say we disagree. But I spent a lot more time on it and looked at the legal rights and the legal decisions of the way it would be.
Yeah.
And I know that a lot of people thought that it would simply make it better for Southern Nevada Water Authority to do it. But in my opinion, the legal rights put forth would have made it a lot tougher for them to ever build a pipeline. I hope I am wrong. I hope so much that I'm wrong on opposing not signing it.
Yeah.
But from my studying and involving in it, it made me believe it should be signed.
So you're feeling worried right now.
I hope that everybody who didn't want it signed really has ability to put forth things and get it, not stop the pipeline like I believe that that agreement could have done.
Yeah. So Dan Bomas, what happens now? I mean, we're going to spend some time with that question, but essentially – what is the initial kind of sense of this? I mean, this was a mandate by Congress that an agreement be signed. The governor of the state of Utah decides not to.
Well, you could be excused for thinking that the railroad has left the station and that this is going to happen. Well, the Southern Nevada Water Authority is made up of municipalities in Southern Nevada, and they are looking down the road and feeling desperate for enough water to sustain their growth, and they're planning to get it anywhere they can.
Yeah.
The Bureau of Land Management has approved the right-of-way now for this pipeline project. The Nevada State Engineer has granted water rights in the interior valleys of the Great Basin, not in the Snake Valley yet, but in other valleys where this water would be pumped. And the building blocks are falling into place to see this happen. Right now, there doesn't appear to be very much standing in its way.
Let's. How is it that Congress got involved in this decision? How is it that Congress is telling the two states to work this thing out? What's the sort of history of that? Do we know?
I think that's necessary when it involves interstate water.
Yeah.
There has to be some kind of agreement, and that's the job of Congress to work that out.
Yeah, Senator Bennett inserted into the Lincoln County Conservation Resource and Recreation and Development Act, LCRDA, a provision which required that the two states have an agreement prior to any export of water from Snake Valley. That still exists. There has been a lingering threat that Senator Harry Reid would, in the dark of night, in a rider to the budget, pull that language out of the congressional act and no longer require an agreement. He's had an opportunity to do that over the years and hasn't chosen to do so. In fact, we haven't actually had a budget in a while either come out of the Senate. So,
yeah.
But that's still a possibility. I do think, however, we do have some legal fights going on now that could be a significant impediment to the ability of the Southern Nevada Water Authority to proceed with the pipeline in Spring, Cave, Dry Lake, and Delamar Valleys. We are two for two in court with the state of Nevada over this water grab, and we're quite confident that we've got a good case, particularly in Cave, Dry Lake, and Delamar Valleys. So this is not over by a long shot. We'll be going to court with the federal government over their record of decision. So there's a lot of fight left in the dog yet. And I would totally agree with Dean Baker, who has fought this harder than anyone, that we now need to redouble our efforts to make sure that we back the governor's decision and that the best result comes out of this for the residents of Snake Valley, but also for the citizens of Clark County, Nevada, who really are beginning to turn against this project.
I want to talk more about that. We'll get to the pipeline because I think that's an important thing to talk about in detail. Dean Baker, you don't trust Harry Reid. I take it.
Harry Reid has been at my kitchen table twice. He has even come to see how much water I could sell to Southern Nevada Water Authority. He has told me twice that it was not right for there to be agriculture in Nevada. and raising hay was worthless, that it was better to send the water down to it. And a couple of weeks ago, he even said it with one of the Las Vegas assemblymen next to me, who was flabbergasted when Harry Reid told me that again when we've argued about it before. So I sometimes think that Harry Reid really wants this thing not signed so he'll have a reason to kill it. I hope that's not the reason. And, you know, he has said he wanted it signed in some of them, but he will be better off if it isn't signed and he can do away with it, because it won't protect us like it would if it was still there.
Well, that leads to the natural question of what in fact it does protect, this agreement. Whether it protects people that, you know, and as the governor has said, it's not ideal, but it's better than nothing. The director of the Nevada Department of Natural Resources, and Alan Biaggi, has said the agreement protects existing water right owners in both states, establishes a long-term monitoring program for the valley's water, air, and biological resources. So, Dan McCool, to that question of, you know, this is something that Dean Baker is worried about and other people are worried about. Look, there are protections built in. How do you respond to that? That there are protections in this agreement.
Well, the bottom line is that if they spend $15 billion on a pipeline, they're not going to turn off the spigot. That is not going to happen. In fact, they couldn't afford to do that, because the only way they can pay for the pipeline is to sell water and do new hookups. So it's financially impossible for Las Vegas to build this pipeline, and then we find out that they're actually mining groundwater and there's negative impacts, and there will be. And they can't just say, okay, we'll stop. They cannot afford to do that. They'll end up like Stockton, California. They'll go broke. So it may say right now on paper that it says in the agreement they won't mine groundwater.
Yeah.
They're going to mine groundwater when they have to, and they'll get Harry Reid or somebody else to try to put that through to allow them to do that. The best way to protect against mining groundwater is not to build the pipeline. That's where the focus should be now.
Steve Erickson, I wanted to get you to comment on that as well, because it seems like in some ways, if you look at the agreement, it seems like there are some fairly liberal protections. If you just look at it, Nevada has agreed to, here I'm quoting, a process where potentially injured parties register a simplified claim with Nevada. And if the water user finds the mitigation unacceptable, the user can appeal. An injured party wouldn't give up their legal rights. Nevada would agree to address adverse impacts. You know, it looks like there's a lot of these kinds of protections. Surely some of the stuff that Dean Baker has been looking at. So, again, to the question that the agreement seems to protect people.
The agreement establishes a process to begin a discussion to arrive at a mediation that might wind up as a court case. This is rather vague stuff, generally. And I guess it comes down to a question of, do we trust the process and the players in it? You know, I know Dean and I have a difference of opinion on this, and it's an honest one. We've been friends for 30 years, and we know that either one of us could be wrong in all of this. But I think the protections are illusory for the water rights holders. Where the governor came down that was, I think, important to note was he, for the first time, made an important statement about protecting the environment as well as protecting the water rights within Utah. So he recognizes a broader question than simply Utah's water rights holders. And I think that's important to note. The agreement didn't really address the broader environmental questions other than those that pertained to endangered species. And the agreement there was to try to keep the lease chub and the spotted frog off the endangered species list, which is fine if you're actually doing so by improving the habitat and the survivability of those species. It's not necessarily so important that you avoid being on some list. So there were some concerns we had about that. You know, we commented, numerous comments were submitted to the governor's team and to the Nevada side. And after the draft was announced in 2009, early 2010, there was never any adjustments made to that agreement that we're aware of. So there were a lot of, I think, very useful comments made by our legal people, by the Goshu tribe in particular and others, and they just simply weren't incorporated. So our position was always to try to fix it or nix it. And we're now at the point where Nevada ought to take a hard look at whether there's ways to accommodate some of the concerns that the people of the state of Utah and the people of Nevada and the governor of Utah have expressed in refusing to go along with the agreement as it's currently drafted.
And you think by the governor not signing it, it opens up that possibility now?
Well, I would hope so, and I think the governor hopes so too, based upon his statements earlier in this program. So yes, this would be an opportunity to go back and say, you know, where can we improve it to win the support it needs? That's one option. There are obviously other options out there, but I think that we also at some point want to get to the broader questions of what this means for water in the West.
Yeah, we're headed there. Dean Baker, though, I did want to hear from you on this idea of you felt more protected by an agreement like this that wasn't perfect. You weren't crazy about it, but you felt like it did protect you.
Well, I do, because I have had a lot of view of the groundwater pumping and what it's taken existing rights. But usually it pumps the water out of the underground onto the ground, and so it makes more fields and things and more wildlife and whatnot there. But it's vastly different if you put it into a pipeline and take it away. Then it is a total disaster. You know, Baker Ranch alone has dried up springs. But the antelope springs that we dried up, I've counted as many as 78 antelope on the pivot right next to the dried up antelope springs. So they're better off eating the hay out of the pivot than they are the springs. But if they put it into the pipeline, it will be a disaster. And I think that's one of the factors in the BLM thing. They say they can build the pipeline. They were forced into letting them build the pipeline. But yet there's the arguments over whether the water is there in that. And so that's got to be forced forward before they let them drill the wells and do it.
801-585-WEST is the number to join the conversation. Our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. Let's take a call. Brian is with us in Salt Lake City. Brian, welcome.
Hi, thanks. I applaud the governor's decision, but not for the reasons he gave. You know, the stakeholders that he pointed to are the farmers in the West Desert who are pumping water you know, out of the aquifer for what was pictured in the paper as, you know, cattle grazing. I don't think that's the best use for the aquifer. You know, the governor's gaining large support for protecting the environment. This is impressive. This is amazing, a big switch. But we need to address the damage of aquifers for gas and oil development as well.
Brian, thanks very much for the call. Steve Erickson, you want to respond to that in any way? I mean, the question being, all right, I'm glad the governor didn't sign it, but sorry, Dean Baker, there shouldn't be ranches there in the first place.
We've all got to eat, too, and food security is important. We've got small amounts of agriculture relative to the Midwest going on in the West Desert, but it's still important. The ranchers out there protect the environment. They provide for the wildlife. They replenish the waters that they use by and large. You know, to ship it all out to Las Vegas, dry up the place, blow all the dust into the urban area here along the Wasatch Front to drive all the communities out of there, then what? What are we going to turn it into, just another expanded military range? There won't be much value left if the water is all gone.
Well, there are unique communities in this area, too. The religious communities that live in Eskdale, the Confederated Tribes of the Goshute Nation in Ibapah, people that have, in the case of the Goshutes, have lived there for far longer than there were states of Utah and Nevada. And so to ignore their needs and just say, you know, let's put Dean Baker out of business doesn't seem to acknowledge that urban residents are not the only ones with interests that need protection.
The main way it's going to put us out of business is not just not being able to pump water, because most of our water that we irrigate and farm with comes from springs and things. Those will be dried up. We're positive. We know that we are mining the water already with our pump wells, and we know that probably we should be working it out and shutting pump wells down already in the valley.
Tim McCoy, I wanted to hear you on this subject.
Well, there's only one Great Basin. That's what's at stake here. It's Dean and his people, but there's something that belongs to everybody. The Great Basin has a lot of public lands. There's national parks, wildlife refuges, a lot of public land. So every American is a stakeholder in this decision today. So it affects ranchers there. It affects the millions of people downstream or downwind. And it affects everybody in America who goes to national parks or cares about public lands. That's literally millions of people who have something to lose if Las Vegas builds this pipeline. That's what's at stake here.
801-585-WEST, the number to join us. Our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. Brian, thanks very much. We're going to take a break. Dan Baumas is with us. We have Dean Baker, Steve Erickson, Dan McCool. We'll be back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're talking about water. Yesterday, Governor Gary Herbert surprised a lot of people when he announced he would not sign an agreement with the state of Nevada that would have shared the water in an aquifer along the border. Las Vegas says it needs that water to grow. Critics say removing it could be a disaster for the environment, for ranchers, for Utah's air quality. So they're pleased with the governor's decision. But Congress, of course, wants some kind of an agreement. And the question is, what happens now? 801-585-WEST is the number to join us. Our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. Dan Baumas, KUER reporter, is here with us, along with Dean Baker. Dean Baker, along with his sons, runs the Baker Ranch in Baker, Nevada. Steve Erickson is with the Great Basin Water Network, and Dan McCool teaches political science at the University of Utah, the author of the book River Republic, The Fall and Rise of America's Rivers. Okay, Dan Baumas, to that question, again, to the bigger question of what happens now, so can Nevada now act unilaterally? Can it go it alone? Does it strip away some of those protections that Dean Baker and others did see in the agreement?
Well, with the agreement or without the agreement, Nevada was in large part free to move ahead. The Southern Nevada Water Authority, I should say, which is not the entire state of Nevada.
Sure.
But yes, they can potentially proceed. And this process is not moving quickly. Even under the agreement, there were delays in certain processes that would have put decisions out for 10 years or more on various aspects of this project. So this is a long-term thing, and I don't expect to see, you know, the caterpillars and backhoes and everything else digging holes to put the pipe in just yet.
Did you get a sense, listening to the governor earlier, I tried to sort of pin him down on this, but it doesn't sound like he's ready to talk about whether or not, Dan, he has a legal strategy. The state has a legal strategy to deal with what might potentially be a lawsuit from Nevada.
He didn't specify one, but the Southern Nevada Water Authority was threatening to sue the state of Utah if it didn't sign the agreement. The Southern Nevada Water Authority might have litigated the agreement even if it had been in place. There are issues that were unresolved even with the agreement, although Dean, of course, feels that perhaps that they would have been easier to resolve if that agreement had been in place.
Yeah, that is how you feel, Dean Baker, is that right?
That is how I feel,
yeah.
Yes.
Steve Erickson, you've talked about that this gives us an opportunity now to get a new agreement, to get a better deal. In fact, you've even said if the Supreme Court gets involved, Utah has a decent chance of getting a better deal.
Well, we're particularly pertaining to the division of the waters.
Right.
That remains to be seen, of course. I mean, we're all working our crystal ball as hard as we can.
Yeah.
But, I think that the doomsaying that we've heard from the governor's advisors on this about, well, Utah doesn't have a chance in court, it runs counter to what we've read and seen and heard and how, our consultations with our legal people. We think we would stand an okay chance in the Supreme Court. We hope it doesn't come to that. There are much better opportunities that present themselves rather than having an arm wrestling contest in the Supreme Court between the states. The agreement would have made that unnecessary. There are other ways that we can proceed that would also prevent that kind of a showdown in the Supreme Court. And we'd hope that the state of Nevada and the Southern Nevada Water Authority would look to some other opportunities rather than just get their backs up and try to haul us off into court.
But Dean Baker, it sounds like you're just like, just let's get this taken care of. I'd rather have some kind of certainty with an agreement than uncertainty. What with a ruling, with Senator Reid. I mean, it sounds like that's what you're looking for, is some kind of certainty in some way.
Well, I think it would have been more certainty, and I have a real fear that Harry Reid will put it out. I have very fear that they'll hold a hearing and get the water, and then they won't build the pipeline, and then I'll be dead and gone, and they'll build the pipeline when the rest of us are through fighting it, and the state of Utah is different than it is today with the knowledge. I think this agreement would have been put on place and helped it through the future. I don't think they're going to build the pipeline quick. I wish that the whole pipeline could be done away with. And I had some opinion that this agreement might be the thing when it got put forth, and the amount of drawdown that we're already doing came up, it might have been quicker and easier to kill the pipeline.
There's no agreement necessary if we don't divert and pump water from Snake Valley. It's only mandatory if we decide to build a pipeline to Snake Valley. And
so once you do that, the decision is made in effect.
Well, if we don't build a pipeline, we don't need an agreement with Nevada. That becomes a moot question.
But the underground world is as yet a mystery to us. I mean, the question is, does pumping water out of Delamar Valley and Spring Valley and Cave Valley deplete the aquifer underneath the Snake Valley? Mm-hmm. Are they connected underground? There are good scientific opinions that say they are. Mm-hmm. All you'd have to do is start pumping and watch the wells go down. And then you'd know.
Yes.
At this point, it's a bit speculative as to whether that would actually happen, but it's not at all unreasonable.
Right.
Also, there is a great deal of fear in our valley, or from my opinion, and others who even wanted to sell water, that it would be St. George, Cedar City, or others that would be getting the water if this agreement wasn't put in place. With this agreement, it meant that the state had to protect us from both Nevada and Utah.
So, Steve, go ahead. Did you have something to say? I wanted to.
Well, I think that it's important to recognize, too, that Southern Nevada Water Authority has not yet pulled the trigger on this project. They've spent millions and millions of dollars on it thus far that it would be difficult for them to walk away from. But their trigger point for going forward with the pipeline project is when Lake Mead reaches an elevation of 1,075 feet. It's not far from there now, but as long as they're above 1075 in elevation, they don't plan to go ahead with the pipeline. And Pat Mulroy has said publicly that they don't want to build this pipeline. So if there's another way to provide for the future water needs of Las Vegas, then we should be examining those options and opportunities as well as trying to beat the pipeline. Obviously, stopping this pipeline is critical to the entire region, but so is the lifeblood, the water, to Las Vegas. And we need to begin to focus on how can we do a better job of making sure that Las Vegas is able to continue to thrive.
And they can't afford it now. The Southern Nevada Water Authority is in financial straits right now because of the collapse of the housing market.
Yeah.
So they don't even have the money to build it right now. And there is a source of water for Las Vegas, and it's the Colorado River. The Colorado River has to be reexamined.
The compact.
No, the compact. The Bureau of Reclamation just issued a report and finally, I think, begrudgingly admitted that the whole scheme for managing the river no longer works. There's a dramatic gap between projected supply and projected demand. The obvious place to solve Las Vegas's water problems is the Colorado River, not Spring Valley and Snake Valley.
The Colorado River, which has been through how many years of drought right now, Steve Erickson?
Well, since at least 2002. And the projections are that this current year, the headwaters of the Colorado are at like 46% of normal.
Yeah,
and that's on the heels of a very dry year last year. So the prospects are not good. We've got 40 million people now dependent upon the Colorado River as their source of water and livelihood. We've got big problems that go well beyond this water grab that Las Vegas is proposing. And I'm not minimizing it. We need to stop this project. But we also need to look at the future. And the Bureau of Reclamation Colorado River Basin study is out now. People ought to have the opportunity to ought to take the opportunity to comment by April 19th on that study. The governor has now proposed a summit to look at Utah's future water needs and a process leading up to that October summit that hopefully will engage the public and some innovative thinking on how we can go forward. We can't simply continue to do business as usual where we just try to build and pipe and ditch and trench our way to the future. We've got to really seriously look at a long-term shortage for the western states, for the entire basin, and how we're going to accommodate the needs in spite of that pending shortage. One of the things that Pat Mulroy has always been right about is that Utah doesn't do a very good job of conservation, and we need to step up and emulate Las Vegas in some respects and to go beyond what Las Vegas has done, just as they have to continue to improve their own conservation in Las Vegas. So there are many things that we have to look at. Now is an opportunity. I think the governor, by postponing any decision on what to do about an agreement with Nevada, has opened up the potential for a broader discussion, and we ought to take advantage of that.
Dan Bomas, do you get a sense of whether or not he's interested in something like that? I mean, one of the questions we put to him was whether or not he saw this as a precedent for doing something like reevaluating that.
Well, and again, as Steve mentioned, there is a summit, you know, on the drawing board to take a look at some of these issues. You know, there are a large group of people who would love to see a pipeline built from Lake Powell to Washington County to carry part of Utah's allocated water rights. At the same time, you know, is Utah prepared to spend billions or more to build this pipeline for water that it's just not going to get? If the states, the upper basin states, Utah, Colorado, Wyoming, do they have the same political clout as the lower basin states, Nevada, Arizona, California? These things have to be worked out. And the Department of the Interior's report on this takes a really critical look at that, and the most important message is that we don't have all the water we thought we did in 1922 when the current law that governs the Colorado River was originally agreed to.
There's an air of unreality in Western water now where there's a gap between how we think and what's really happening on the ground. This idea that we have normal precipitation needs to be tossed out. But what was normal is actually abnormal. And there are all these bizarre ideas. Pat Mulroy's mentioned building a pipeline from the Mississippi or a tributary to Denver and then exchanging Denver water. They're right next to a river. These are outrageous ideas, and they're enormously expensive. The projected cost of the Las Vegas pipeline is around $15 billion.
Yeah.
For a water district that's basically broke right now, we have to change the way we're thinking in fundamental ways. And I hope this is an opportunity, a turning point where we say now's the time to put our heads together and think of new ways to manage water in the West.
Dean Baker?
Well, you know, I get accused of wanting to hurt Las Vegas. I don't want to hurt Las Vegas, but I think the pipeline will hurt Las Vegas more than any. And if the Colorado River goes down and they're pumping it, that means that they're going to get less and less water, even if they take all the surface water and everything else into the pipeline. So I think that to save Las Vegas is not at all a way for them to save themselves. And I don't want to hurt Las Vegas. And I think if they build that pipeline, it'll hurt Las Vegas. It'll hurt the whole state of Nevada. It'll make the huge environmental problem, the wildlife, and it'll hurt us. But we'll be a minor part of the compared to what it does to Las Vegas and the state of Nevada and the wildlife and creating the environmental problem.
So, Steve Erickson, I guess the agreement, if it's off the table, I'm not sure if that's the way to put it, but I guess you turn your attention to the pipeline now, fighting that?
Well, we've always had our attention focused on that pipeline, fighting it, and we're going to continue to fight it, and we're optimistic that Las Vegas is going to come to their senses and see a more productive, affordable, sustainable, long-term solution, and that may involve desalination and trading out the water in the Colorado with California. There are other opportunities that we haven't examined. Flexibility in the compact is going to be an important part of that. But, yes, we're still focused on stopping the pipeline, and we think that now we can partner with the state of Utah in doing that a little better. We can hopefully get the message out to the public here in Utah a little more effectively that now's our time to put a stop to this project and to look at a better water future for all of us.
Dan McCool, you've talked about the fact that, that politicians aren't going to lead on this question, that at least if I understood you right, that citizens are the ones. Politicians are looking for these citizen-backed initiatives. Then they'll jump in to see how that all goes.
Yes, politicians don't lead. They follow. And that typically happens in citizen-led initiatives where citizens try to save a river or stop a project or something along those lines. It's the citizens that start the coalition, that put together the effort, and the politicians get involved when they think there's plenty of support for that. And I think that's what's going to happen in this case. It's sort of a good news, bad news scenario. The proposed pipeline is so bad in terms of the impact. It has such a pervasive impact that the good news is that there are so many stakeholders who have a reason to join a coalition to stop the pipeline that it's actually unprecedented. The coalition to stop this pipeline is simply enormous.
So what happens next? Do any of you have a sense? I mean, Steve Erickson, you mentioned before, none of us have a crystal ball. You're all sort of trying to get them to work. But what's your sense of what happens now?
Well, we go to court with the state of Nevada in our legal action against the Nevada State Engineer on the allocations in Spring, Cave, Dry Lake, and Delamar Valleys in Nevada. We'll see how that turns out. It may be many months yet before.
Well, you've won one of those cases already.
Yes, we have. And that was in Cave, Dry Lake, and Delamar, where the judge found the decision of the state engineer arbitrary, capricious, that he didn't take into account that this water from those valleys flows actually to the Colorado River Basin, and it's already allocated down gradient from those valleys. So we're optimistic in that one. That case goes to court in June. We also then will be filing probably in the next month or two a case against the U.S. government so that the legal actions will go forward on our side. The BOR study that I mentioned earlier and Dan mentioned is front and center right now. The governor's process goes forward with examining what water future should be in Utah and how we meet our projected needs. This is an opportunity for people to get involved, to be active on the subject, to protect our airshed, to stop this pipeline project and get some rationality back into the way we approach these problems. So I'm optimistic and have maintained all along that Dean Baker and all of his friends and neighbors are going to prevail in this one.
How are you feeling right now, Dean?
Well, one of the problems is, and one of the reasons that I kind of like the agreement that put the state of Utah more in the position, because Southern Nevada Water Authority in their past has spent millions and millions and millions of dollars fighting it, when like a rancher on us who wants to fight them, we just don't have that kind of money to spend. So it's very critical that everybody who doesn't want that pipeline helps to stop it, because the money is tough to go by.
Dan Bomas, what's your sense of what happens now?
Well, I think the Southern Nevada Water Authority has a decision to make. They threatened to sue the state of Utah if the state didn't sign the agreement. So, okay, let's see what they do. The possibility exists, as the governor mentioned, for a lawsuit involving the states of Utah and Nevada, where the U.S. Supreme Court would be the court of original jurisdiction. That could happen, and that would make for an interesting spectacle. It's also possible, don't hold your breath, but the Southern Nevada Water Authority may give up. They may decide that with the issues they have to deal with the potential for environmental damage, that this is not the plan that they need to proceed with, given the cost and the benefit of pumping this water out of the Great Basin.
We got an email from Gerald who saying, why not use this as an opportunity to renegotiate the Colorado River Compact? And he says this at the end of his – and we've talked about that. But he said, these huge, expensive water projects are a thing of the past. And Dan McQuill, come to you finally with that idea. You say this is an opportunity for the state of Utah, for the West, to think in different ways about this. Are you optimistic that that will happen, could happen?
I think it has to happen. Climate change and inaccurate projections. The 1922 compact was negotiated on a mythological amount of water. It's based on a hydrological fallacy. All that has come home to roost now, and we're seeing dramatic conflicts over water in the West. We just saw it in the Pecos River in New Mexico. I think that's a model for what's going to happen in other river basins, because we over-allocated the water, and even if the supply wasn't being diminished, we'd have trouble. But with climate change and other miscalculations, we have a fundamental gap between what we thought we had and what we have. We have to take a new tack on this. And in the past, the way we solve these problems is we turn to the federal government, the sugar daddy, and said, build us a big project, a big dam or a pipeline or something. The last time I looked, the federal government was a little short on available cash. That the sugar daddy option is no longer available. Now we're going to actually have to get rational about how we use water in the West.
It's Dan McQuill. He teaches political science at the University of Utah, the author of the book River Republic, The Fall and Rise of America's Rivers. Steve Erickson is with the Great Basin Water Network. Dean Baker, along with the Sons, run the Baker Ranch in Baker, Nevada. And Dan Bomas, of course, a KUER reporter. Thank you all very much.
Thank you
for being
Doug.
With us. Radio West is a production of KUER News, the program produced by Benjamin Bombard and Elaine Clark. I'm Doug Fabrizio.